Well, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to speak at this symposium. And I'll acknowledge up front that most of the work that I'm going to report was done by Christian Krupke, who is in the room. So I'll defer most of the questions to him. Let's go to the right.
Left.
Okay. Growers generally don't appreciate the fact that stink bugs move into their orchards, and Bruce Larson, who is from Washington State University, captured the sentiments very nicely here. Growers tend to think that they didn't order stink bugs as a problem, but they do face them. They're not a, stink bugs aren't a statewide problem in tree fruit production, which is occurs on about 170,000 acres, or apple production, in Washington State. It tends to be local, localized in certain regions associated with certain habitats, and varies from year to year. The primary species are shown here, and we focused the work on Eucystis conspersus because at that time it seemed to be the most dominant species that was causing injury in apple orchards. And one of the first things we did was to survey damage in 1998, and we kept getting reports from growers that they were finding damage in the orchards, and certainly in the regions where this seemed to be a problem, we saw a range from zero, in 15 orchards, a range from zero to 19% damage. It was an average of about 5.2% cullage, which is unacceptable to our industry. And what we also had noticed was that a lot of misidentification of the damage was occurring. This is damage from the stink bug feeding, and this is injury caused by a physiological disorder called bitter pit, which is the result of a deficiency in calcium in the fruit. And so one of the first things that we did was to characterize better the kinds of damage so that the growers and people in the warehouse assessing this damage and characterizing it for feedback to the growers would be doing this correctly. So you see the typical stink bug feeding damage, and this is not necessarily particular, just the Eucystis seems to be true for all the stink bugs. It occurs more on the shoulders and on the sides of the fruit and the stem bowl, and you get a conical kind of a feeding in a cross-sectional cut. Whereas bitter pit tends to occur from the midpoint of the fruit and down towards the calyx area more. And you see the damage in cross-section is a little bit different. This is significant because growers were being told that they had bitter pit damage for several years, and they put on more and more calcium and saw no change in damage, when actually what they were looking at was stink bug problems. So we've sorted this out, and it's important. As you'll see later, the distribution of damage is also a characteristic of what kind of of issue you're dealing with. From several years of study looking at the general phenology of Eucystis, we found that there's one generation. You have reproductive adults overwintering. You have a generation, basically reproductive time of eggs and nymphs in midsummer. And then you have reproductive or non-reproductive adults in the fall. And it's this time of the year when these newly produced adults are moving in to orchards from native habitats. And I will say, for those of you who don't know, the major fruit growing areas in Washington State occur in a desert environment that with irrigation. And so the surrounding habitat is more of a high steppe desert with forests of apple orchards scattered throughout. And so we see this kind of movement from these native habitats into the orchards. We looked at the expression or the accumulation of damage over time, and it starts in late or midsummer, and then you just get this accumulation of damage in the orchard over time. So it can go all the way through harvest of all the apple varieties. And certainly the latest varieties are the most susceptible to damage because they're exposed for a longer period of time to these adults that are moving into the orchards to feed. We do know that the stink bugs won't reproduce on apple, so they're just moving in to these orchards for a late summer dessert. feeding on the sugars and the water that's in the fruit. We looked at the distribution of damage in large and small blocks, but this is an example of a small block where we would sample a certain number of apples per tree and certain number of trees in a row, and then several orchards. And this is typical of what we see where, and this is an extremely small orchard, but you can see that the damage distribution is associated with the borders. And that's very characteristic of the damage. And it's also characteristic of a way to separate the bitter pit injury, which would occur pretty much throughout a block because it's a physiological, nutritional problem, versus stink bug injury, which is primarily confined to the borders. Of course, growers are skeptical, and they say, but aren't the stink bugs reproducing on the cover crop? And so Christian got this great big sucker device out here. The first week, he had this mounted on a backpack, but he's a creative individual, and he switched to a four-wheeler. And basically what we saw when we sampled in the orchard, the yellow bars here, we saw a few young nymphs early on, but no adults or later nymphs from the cover crop samples. But when we sampled in the same way, the border vegetation, we could find all stages, and you can see that they're, you know, maturing as we go through the season here. So our conclusion was that the cover crop is not producing, or not the primary source of damage or stink bugs, especially schistus in orchards. We thought that, of course, then growers, we identified the native host plants, and growers says, well, why don't we just eliminate the host plants? You know, we do a clear cutting or cleaning of the habitat next to the orchard. And so we did some studies where we cleared native habitats for 50 feet near the orchard border and left some natural, where we replicated this. And we didn't see any difference in the damage in the orchard associated with this clearing. So this habitat removal activity didn't seem to be a positive approach. We did begin working with the aggregation pheromone that Jeff had identified. We started trying to use some different kinds of traps, looking at captures of schistus, and these were not very successful, these kind of traps, a tube trap or these jug traps, compared to just putting a lure on an introduced weed, this mullein plant, which the stink bugs liked very much and grew prolifically along most of the orchard borders. We thought of, okay, we could use this then as a monitoring system. And we put, we developed a lure of our own, basically a polyethylene cap, for a vial cap that opened in the top, and we could put pheromone in there. And then we put it on these plants. And we could, and by once we put the pheromone on a plant, within 24 hours, these aggregations formed. And they remained consistent with the pheromone there. And then once you removed the lure, then these aggregations declined over about 3 to 4 days. So this is pretty positive evidence that, you know, compared to trap plants without the aggregation pheromone, where you do form natural aggregations, we were forming super aggregations using this pheromone. And we did this both in the spring and in the fall, and there didn't seem to be really any difference between the reproductively mature or the reproductively diapausing individuals. We got significant differences in the attraction. Then the question was, when do these aggregations form? Because we thought, okay, if we could, since these traps didn't seem to work for us, we could maybe use a trap plant to monitor and assess populations of stink bugs near the orchards. And the question is, well, when do these forms and what do the numbers mean? So we saw this pattern, and the next step for us was to look at the diurnal activity or accumulation. And so we baited plants, and then Christian went out at every 2 hours, and he actually counted the bugs on the plants. And what we saw was these aggregations certainly begin to form in the late afternoon and evening, but they peaked during the middle of the night, and then they started to decline again during light, so that the peak activity of the peak formation of these aggregations was at night. And the question was, if we place these on plants, well, that's the data. The next question was looking at deal periodicity. Would these numbers that we could find on the plants at night represent what was the relationship between these different numbers from day to day? If we're going to actually use the numbers and count, you're not going to get too many consultants that are going to go out at midnight and count how many bugs there are in a plant. So what's the relationship between the night and day numbers? And so we set up this experiment, and this is the percent of the peak. So we're looking at in relationship to the actual peaks that were similar on day on the nights of day 2 and 3. And you look at the relationships here, and certainly the peaks, the aggregations decline during the daytime. So it's roughly a 30 to 50% of the peak that occurs in the at night. So that's good information to have. So we're working with the aggregation pheromone, and growers are always concerned if you're having something that attracts insects and you put it in the orchard or near the orchard, are you going to attract all the bugs into my orchard and cause damage? So we looked at a dispersal experiment, and these are kind of neat insects to be able to mark. You can put different colors on them. And so we released bugs from different distances to a baited plant, 300 bugs per distance, 4 replicates, and then we did daily surveys and removed the bugs from the baited plants. And basically what we saw, we had low recovery, which is not too surprising with any mark recapture study. But basically, it looks like the distance here is relatively short range, that we're not attracting insects from large distances. And this is verified also by some work that Christian did, where he would actually bait plants and then take individuals off on a daily basis, and the numbers that seemed to be recruited from probably a small area around that declined pretty dramatically after a few days. So we thought that we could then use maybe since this was a relatively short-range cue, it seemed, in our environment, we could bait border areas with this attractant and leave some unbaited, and possibly we would keep the insects from moving into the orchard and causing damage. Well, it was a good idea, but it didn't work. There was actually no difference in the border rows of the damage using this approach. And we thought, well, we could try a trap tree concept, that we could place pheromones in the tree, and then we could see if we could concentrate the bugs in the trees and hold them there and maybe cause damage on one tree, but sacrifice that tree and maybe protect this other tree, adjacent tree. And certainly that worked. The concept worked very well. And in fact, a control tree that was farther away had more damage. The growers weren't really enthusiastic about the sacrificial tree approach. Though conceptually it looked interesting, they didn't really want to sacrifice the fruit from that tree to maybe protect the rest of the orchard. So we moved on to a concept where we looked at the aggregation pheromone as an attract and kill method. And we baited host plants, primarily this mullein plant, along orchard borders. And then we treated this plant with a moderately effective insecticide on a regular basis during the season. And we compared that with unbaited, unsprayed plants. And what we saw here, using this approach, we were able to reduce damage in the border rows, which is the significant row, if you remember the distribution data, by 50%, just by doing this, just by baiting and treating these plants adjacent to the orchard. So that was a significant result for us. And some growers are continuing to use this practice to help reduce damage in their orchards. And then we finally went to using or testing this pyramid trap, and we demonstrated that indeed this was a good trap for attracting bugs on a per-day basis. And we started doing some work with this. We thought we could also treat the surface possibly of this trap with a toxicant and use it as a attract and kill system of some type. We did a lot of work with insecticides, and really the only effective insecticides for stink bugs in our system, these insects moving in from outside, are the pyrethroids. And we typically, in our pest management programs, discourage the use of pyrethroids because they're very broad-spectrum toxicants, and they impact negatively the biological control that we try to sustain in these orchards. And what you see here is we got good control using Danitol in a block, one application, about 80% suppression of damage. But the result was that the following year we had blow-ups of spider mites, which is what we typically see in a lot of our orchards. Danitol happens to be a pyrethroid that also has miticidal activity, so we didn't see the effect the first year. We saw a delayed effect. And there's Christian, maybe not the best picture of him, but that's the only thing I could grab off the website from where he is now in Canada. And Christian did a lot of work with mating aggregations, and I'm not going to report on all that here. He's in the process of publishing some of this work. But one of the things that he did do and has been reported on is that when we look at these aggregations, we see the accumulation of the aggregation, again, the peaks at night, but we really don't see mating occurring until almost the middle of the night. And that peak mating occurs almost right around midnight. As been reported earlier, the matings last an average of 9 hours, and a significant proportion of body size is transferred. And males and females will mate on at least two or three consecutive nights. So they're a prolific insect, and they mate a lot. New challenges. We've done most of our work in the past on apples, but this year I was appraised of a situation. Our region grows a lot of sweet cherries, and they've expanded the production of sweet cherries from about early June in low-lying areas with early varieties to mid-August with late maturing varieties grown at about 2,000 feet elevation. And what's happened here is because the cherries are now being harvested late summer, they evidently have become a very attractive host for stink bugs, these adults moving into the orchard. And in this particular situation, these are bins with cherries in them, and these are cooling pads. They wet these down and put foam pads over. When you flip these back, you just see 50 to 60, in this case, chlorchroa, on these bins. And this is the damage that you see on the sweet cherry, and it was significant this last year. So here's a new opportunity for us. So in summary, the species complex and seasonal phenology is fairly well understood for stink bugs in Washington State. Eustachys form aggregation, Conspersus forms aggregation within 24 hours, and then when you remove the aggregation, using the aggregation pheromone, when you remove that, those aggregations break apart within 72 hours. The aggregations form or peak at night and then decline the following day, so we can't really use necessarily monitoring populations on host plants with aggregation pheromone as an accurate estimate of numbers. The daytime aggregation levels are roughly 50%, but I'm not real confident in that. We have tried the attract and kill approach using the aggregation pheromone. And that seems to work, especially to mitigate damage on borders. And when that's accompanied with border spray, our growers have been able to keep damage to reasonable levels in most commercial apple orchards. And the challenges remain for managing stink bugs in the future when we're looking at some of these late maturing sweet cherries now. And it was interesting to me that when I went and looked at this sweet cherry problem, I didn't see one Eustachys conspersus stink bug. They were all chlorochroa. So I don't know if we've had a shift in species composition in this region or whether it's a chlorochroa just is attracted to these cherry. So thank you very much.
Question for Jay?